Honestly Unbalanced.
Welcome to episode 133 of Honestly Unbalanced, where we chat to yoga teacher, creative guide, and former GB acrobatic gymnast, Lucy Sesto. She combines her love of psychology and sociology with movement and self-inquiry in a way that feels both kind of intelligent and deeply human. We explore her shift from gym floors and reception desks to managing a London wellness studio, teaching corporate yoga, running international retreats, and working alongside Joe Wicks on the Body Coach platform. She's great at social media, but she talks about her desire to make art, not just content. The conversation is really useful for anyone in the yoga or wellness teaching space. We talk about how to build an authentic brand as a yoga teacher, shifting from full-time teaching to more creative retreat-based work, the realities of content creation, working with big name brands whilst maintaining integrity, setting boundaries as a female teacher in the wellness space, and reclaiming play and self-expression via retreats. It's a great episode. I hope you enjoy. But before we get going, I want to remind you of the yoga mat that I've been using for years. The best yoga mat in the world. They're grippy, supportive, and genuinely make a difference to how your practice feels and what you can do in your practice. Whether you're doing deep, strong vinyasa or just chilling out in shavasana, these are the mats for you. They're life form. They're eco-friendly. They last a long time. Their alignment guides completely actually change how you practice yoga. And because you are a listener, you can get 10% off anything on the Lifeform website with code HUSLER10, HUSLER10. And a quick one, feet. Let's talk about feet. Specifically, shoes that don't treat your feet like they're trying to smuggle them through the airport. I'm talking about Vivo Barefoot. Pretty much the only shoes I wear when I'm not being a barefoot dad or being a barefoot yoga teacher. They're minimalist shoes that let your feet move the way they're supposed to move. They're light, comfy, and they have shoes for every occasion, whether you're chasing toddlers in the woods, lifting weights and want to interact with that flat surface beneath you, or whether you are kind of hiking to the local farmer's market, or maybe hiking in a deeper wilderness. But if you want 20% off, that's 20% off the best barefoot shoes on the market, then code HUSLER20, HUSLER20, will get you 20% off Vivo Barefoot. Now, enjoy the episode. Honestly Unbalanced. You did your dissertation on creativity.
There we go.
Heavy stalking there.
And heavy stalking.
I looked at your social media, and like your social media has a very clean aesthetic. Like lots of warm hues, and you've taken the approach of even when you do reels that are like you walking around the city, you pick a nice picture for the header. Like it looks good.
Yeah.
And I just wondered to what degree, like you're trying to, another quote from you, make art, not content. so to what degree when you kind of manage your social media, are you trying to make sure it all looks good? And if so, like how important is it? And then also, yeah. Where does the desire to do that come from? Like, do you have a hidden background in art design?
Yeah, so I feel like I've always been interested in that kind of stuff. And it was actually, even back to in school days, I really wanted to do art as a GCSE, but because of the timing schedule thing, I wasn't allowed to do it. And then my partner's into photography, my little brother's into photography, videography. So I'm surrounded by these people that kind of creatively make things look pretty all the time. And I got into photography myself a little bit as well, like back in the day when I first started doing yoga. Actually, it was before yoga, I think. I just enjoyed taking pictures of random things in general. And so I kind of brought that in a little bit once I started doing my yoga Instagram. When I first created it, I was like, okay, I kind of want it to look a certain way. And I think I go through phases myself with like design and what I like to wear and certain colors. And I kind of, you know, like I had an orange phase, my laptop was orange, my phone was orange, everything in my room was orange. Like it kind of I go through phases like that. And I kind of wanted to bring that into my brand as well, because obviously I am the brand. It's kind of a personal thing. When you're a yoga teacher, you just are the brand. And so I wanted it to reflect what I like as well. And I wanted that to show on my Instagram as well, to kind of give people an idea of me as a person, I guess. But yeah, it's changed recently because of how social media has been changing, and Instagram's obviously changed a lot now, and you know, reels are very different, and it's all very different place. So the kind of aesthetic feed is like not really a thing anymore. Most
No.
people is. It's just like put all these crazy reels out and selling things. But I just wanted to keep it that way because that's something I've always really loved doing, even if it's not in trend with what social media wants you to do right now. It's just something that I enjoy doing. But yeah, I don't know. I just, yeah.
I think it is nice that you kept the aesthetic. So although in like in terms of a finite piece of content, often people will never see that lead image. But the reality is, I think for many personal brands, as it were, what you want people to do is click on your page and see you and see who you are. Because that's when they follow you and interact with you.
Yeah.
Like if it's just something like some funny reel, no, they might engage with it and like it and maybe share it.
Yeah.
But probably won't follow you unless they actually click on the thing and actually like the content you're creating. And I think so what you've cultivated there is kind of a miniature website, a very good looking professional miniature website. And it says a lot about you. I think the fact you've made an effort to do that, that when you work with brands, they're like, okay, well, she takes it seriously. So I think there is value in that.
Definitely. I kind of see my social media as a portfolio now. It's kind of basically like a CV. And so that's a lot of the time when you do work with brands or work with people, the first thing they're like, oh, what's your Instagram? I want to see what your Instagram's like. And so I wanted it to be a place where people can see what I'm like and also the things that I do and kind of weave in other parts of my personality, because yoga is one part of my personality. There's also lots of other things that I enjoy doing, like traveling and creating things and all of that kind of stuff. So I kind of wanted it to be a place where they could see all of that in one nice little box.
How much have you utilized your partner's photography abilities?
I think
that could be key to making it or breaking it as a content creator, having someone around you all the time that can do stuff. Like Holly, my wife, I love her to bits. But I will often, even today, she helped me do a reel, which is for a brand. And I framed it all. It's on a tripod. And I said, make sure you can't see like anything on the edge, like on the floor.
Yeah.
And then I came to edit it and there's just like a cushion and a shoe like in the bottom corner for the video. But so many more wonderful things about her. But having that, I think it's wonderful. And Holly and I have a weird dynamic because she also doesn't really like her photo being taken. And I love photography. I've got like thousands of cameras everywhere, but she's not really a fan of having a photo taken. So it's a funny one.
Yeah.
Let's go on about something you said there regards personal brand and yoga teachers kind of need to have a personal brand. And it's a weird one. That could be quite triggering to hear perhaps. Because many yoga teachers would think, well, that's not what I signed up for, personal branding. And then when I first started my social media, which is now about 10 plus years ago, loads of people said, oh, you can't put yoga on Instagram. That's not real yoga. No one would ever take a photo of me doing yoga. And all these people are now on Instagram taking photos of themselves doing yoga, of course. So it's constantly evolving. When you came into the game, as it were, and became a yoga teacher, which from your website is 6 years ago, I think. But when you started, was it that might change now? That's a problem with putting actual numbers on websites.
I know, how long ago was 2018?
Just change it to many years or something like that.
Many years.
When you kind of came into it at that point, did you think straight away, okay, well, I'm not just going to be a wandering teacher. That is unnamed, that is just, you know, has their first name on a studio list and just turns up and teaches, that I need to make more of it than that. What career were you doing before that? I know you were a gymnast. Did you have an income making career before that? Or was it straight into yoga teaching?
So I finished university, graduated uni, and then I had a lot of different jobs. I did try the corporate life for a while, and I basically had like a year or a year and a half after uni where I was just, because I still didn't know that I wanted to be a yoga teacher at that point. I knew that I liked it as like a hobby and a thing on the side. I didn't really know or understand that you could make that a career. I just was like, oh, that's just something I like to do. What do I want to do with my job? So I had a lot of admin jobs, a lot of receptionist jobs. I actually worked on reception at Gymbox for quite a long time. And I did that sort of on and off in uni as well. And that was actually the place where I realized that fitness or wellness and yoga could become a career. Yoga specifically, I knew that you could be a PT. My dad and my older brother were PTs as well. But yoga, I didn't know that I could do that. but talking to the yoga teachers and realizing that it's something I love to do. And I was like, oh, maybe it'll be something I love to teach as well. And so because I came at it from that perspective of I need to make this a job, a career, as well as it being something that I love doing, I did sort of try and do a lot of research. I remember talking to a lot of people being like, how do you make it work as a yoga teacher? Like, what do I do? Because obviously when you finish your training, I didn't know anybody in the industry. I had like no connections with studios and got like maybe two classes, which was like 50 quid a week. But I was like, how do I live on this? So yeah, I did a lot of research, and I also did marketing for a year in my first year at university. And I was like, right, okay, I feel like I need to put these things together and try and do it and sell it in that way. But yeah, it is a really weird thing, and I really, really struggled with like pricing myself at the beginning as well, because especially with private clients, like I just wanted to help them. I didn't want them, and they'd be like, oh, how much do you charge? And I was like, oh, I don't know, how much do you want to pay me? I don't know. It was a weird thing at first, and then it was a bit, yeah, you had to kind of, especially if you're a yoga teacher in London and you need to pay rent, you need to pay bills, you do have to kind of navigate this weird space of like charging people for money, obviously. But yeah.
So at that time, based on kind of your research and reflection on previous education, what did you decide were going to be your income streams and how you were going to then move towards that direction?
I think I came at it just purely from teaching classes. I was like, right, I'm going to do loads of classes a week. I loved teaching. I really enjoyed it. So I was like, this is great. I get to do something I love and I get to make money from it. And then quickly learned that yoga teachers are very underpaid in London, considering how much rent is. So I was like, oh, okay, I have to do like a lot of classes. And I was doing a lot of classes actually up till COVID happened, when obviously all the studios shut down. And that's what kind of made me realize that there's other avenues that you can go into from yoga, like hosting events and retreats and online and all of this kind of stuff as well. So that's really where it kind of pivoted, was during COVID. But I really loved teaching. I just always had in the back of my mind that it wouldn't be something that was super sustainable, because like I was young and had energy and I could teach all these classes, but I kind of knew, I was like, I'm going to get to a point at some point where teaching 20 classes a week is not going to feel great and I will be burnt out. So I was trying to just navigate like where do I go when that point happens, and how do I like build up to that, or put steps in place
And
for
was
that.
it a build-up? Because many yoga teachers, are teaching either that many a week or a combination of that many and then privates as well, which equates to, let's say, 20, 26 sessions a week. At my peak, I was 26 public classes and international workshops every weekend. Like,
That's a
super,
lot.
super intense. And it looked great on social media, but actually it was horrific. So did you take a jump? Was it a gradual like reduction of classes and just trust and then trusting that things that other things would come up, like the events, etc., or what was it? Describe that process.
I honestly think that the main thing that like it's kind of like a forced jump, because everything shut down in COVID and I suddenly realized that my whole income was just teaching in person classes, and I was like, oh, like this is like, what do I do from here when they're not there anymore? And that's when I started doing Zoom classes online and things just started building, and I had a lot of space and a lot of time to think in COVID because I wasn't teaching as much, and that was just making me think of all these ideas. I created an ebook and I did online stuff. I did an online retreat, and that kind of made all the thoughts bubble around that time. And so I guess it was like a forced jump that kind of pushed me into it. But it was something that was in the back of my mind. I don't know how long it would have taken me to actually make that leap and do it if the studios hadn't all shut down. Hopefully I would have done it at some point, but it probably would have taken a lot longer to get there. But yeah.
I think COVID was wonderful in that sense for many people, as it did force people to make some significant changes. And many yoga teachers left, didn't they? They just left and never came back and, found income elsewhere. Jump ship or created more opportunities. Well, for me, actually, initially it was bad because I had a whole year of amazing things lined up,
Really?
that every single one of them got cancelled. And it did send me, for better or worse, in a slightly different trajectory in life. Let's jump around a little bit, okay? And let's talk about the partnerships that you've created with brands and the like. So you've got some big stuff, like you work with Joe Wicks on his online platform and events with him. And then I see pretty regularly, like you're working with certain brands like Viva Barefoot or lots of, I feel so old, like lots of fashion brands. I just don't know what they are. Like I keep seeing when I teach, obviously, I teach lots of classes still. like lots of like women suddenly wearing a certain brand, and like, I can't even say it, and it's everywhere.
I don't know
and, and I've never, whatever that is, and I've, like, and they'll just appear out of nowhere, and I just feel ancient. That I don't know why I should know these things, but So, how did you start these brand partnerships? Did you approach people? Did you get an agency? And then also, kind of the next layer to that, how do you, you know, because I've done many partnerships as well, and it's been a bit of a struggle for me. How have you kind of like maintained your integrity as a yogi, whatever that means, whilst partnering with brands? And like, when have you said no? So kind of lots of layers to that question.
So initially, going back to the first bit, when I first got the job with Body Coach and Joe Wicks, that was actually because I'd started putting myself online more during COVID. I was doing those Zoom classes and things like that. And then I actually didn't see the post. Someone sent me his post saying that he was looking for trainers and to apply. And because I'd done the online stuff on Zoom, I was like, oh, I can do online classes now. That's great. I'll just apply for it. And then it was a whole sort of big thing on social media, which narrowed it down. I think it was from like 5,000 people to 30 to 5 to 3. So it was like a whole procedure. But that was kind of the route in that I got that job, which was really, really interesting, really fun.
When you say it was on social media, were people voting?
Yeah, well, not voting, but he was kind of creating like this whole competition on Instagram. Okay. So people were talking about like which trainers they preferred and which ones they wanted on the app. And
that sounds so stressful.
Yeah. it was a bit overwhelming at the beginning. It worked out so well. Mm. And I'm really glad that it all kind of went the way that it did. But that kind of gave me a lot more of the confidence I had to kind of like put myself out there and put myself online as well, which really helped. And then from that, we've had lots of meetings together. They kind of acted as our managers in a way.
Okay.
And helped us with brand deals and, well, kind of spoke to us about brand deals and how to navigate them, which was really useful information because I feel like it's hard. Even now, it is still hard to navigate because people ask you for a rate for like a random thing you've never done.
That's the worst question. And it's but every creative professional has that. And like, who answers first? Like, is it the person that says their budget or is it you?
Yeah, I know. It's like, what's your budget for this?
And I try and be like so vague where possible. Like, well,
yeah,
it kind of varies between this and then this, which is 10 times the amount, but it depends on these variables. Only you know, so you have to tell me.
Yeah, exactly. And it is always a bit awkward, isn't it? And I've kind of learned the hard way. I think I was going in way too low at the beginning. And you can kind of tell when you're going way too low because they immediately come back being like, yes, that's great. And I was like, okay. But I think it's just a learning process and it's always different with different brands and how they approach things. And I mean, I had a PR agency for a little bit. And then that kind of just like fizzled out over time. And but I still sort of navigate those deals by myself. I would like to hire a PR agency, I think, to kind of do that because I don't love talking money with people. It's not something that I enjoy doing. And then in terms of like choosing brands, I think I definitely at the beginning said yes to a lot more than I probably should have, things that didn't align just because I was really excited about people wanting to actually work with me. I was like, oh yeah, great, I'll just work with everyone. And then I kind of learned that maybe that's not the best way to do things because if I don't align with a brand, me doing something with them shows that alliance. And it kind of, you know, especially if it's something to do with morals or anything like that, you don't want to be putting stuff out there that like doesn't align with that. And yeah, I think I can't remember what brand it was, but I think it clicked because I'm vegan. And so there was a brand that like sold these leather products and they offered to pay quite a lot of money, but I was just like, actually that doesn't, like it doesn't align with my values in that. And I don't really want to put myself forward for that. And that was kind of the first realization that I could say no and it's okay. And that, like other things will still come in. It's such a tricky space to navigate. Every yoga teacher I talk to is like, I don't know how to do it or I don't like doing it. And it's kind of unavoidable.
they didn't sign up for it really.
Like
when I started social media simply to promote my classes. And to be honest, that's still the focus. And then I guess that leads nicely to the next question is you started teaching yoga. Social media was a tool to put yourself out there as a yoga teacher and you've still got nice projects going on. But to what degree do you think you'll move into the pure kind of content creation space as like your main ongoing income stream, and you become like an effective content creator that also teaches yoga rather than a yoga teacher that creates a little bit of content to support their teaching?
It's a weird one.
Neither are right, just to clarify. Neither way is like right or wrong.
I never wanted to be a content creator. It was actually during COVID and getting the whole job with the body coach kind of boosted my profile a bit. And then suddenly I just like became one. And people, when you have a certain amount of followers, they kind of expect you to just be a content creator. And while I enjoy taking photos and cool little cute videos and that kind of stuff, I tried to be a content creator for a while, and I actually didn't really enjoy it that much. I just kind of felt like it was taking, like anything I was then doing in life, like it was kind of felt like an opportunity to become a reel. And I was like, I want to just enjoy the things I'm doing. I don't want to have to keep thinking about, oh, this would like make such a cute little aesthetic reel. But I just want to be there and enjoy it. And it kind of got to a weird, kind of blurred line with that. And now I've just kind of almost gone back the other way, where I still do enjoy making content, but now I'm just making the content that I want to put out there on my own schedule. Because I think I was quite strict on myself before. I was like, you have to post 3 times a week at 7 p.m. and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it just felt too rigid. And then when you do that, you kind of get that creative burnout, because you're like, I have nothing to say, but I need to post something. Mm. And it's kind of a bit weird. So now I took a break from it for a little bit, and I didn't post for like maybe a month or something. And now I'm just trying to get back into that space of just posting what I want to do or what I want to post. But yeah, content creation is a great job for those people that do it, but I don't know if I would want to do it full time.
I think people don't realize how much of a job it actually is.
Yeah.
Like even today, I did the shortest reel today. Actually ended up doing pretty badly, solely because it was me advertising. Whenever I am advertising something, obviously it will always perform a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. And if I'd cut it at 5 seconds, it would have done really well. But like it took me, and it was so simple. Like it was like two locations with a tripod and a little bit of light. And like every time something went wrong, like I hadn't plugged the mic in properly, then back and forward, then I didn't realize it had fallen off because I was doing a boxing thing. And it took me, including editing time, probably like 2.5 hours. And the reality is, I'm probably going to delete it tomorrow because you didn't do that one at all. Or no, not delete it. You shouldn't delete it. You should archive it.
Don't delete, archive.
And then as I went to post it, something that I'd scheduled on my photography account, I didn't realize had gone into my main account, which I then had to delete. That made it perform worse. And that was just something minor. And I always use the example of, I think, what's her name? Is it Georgia? She's basically like a youngish blonde. She does triathlons and running, but like not professional. And she's not like a professional fitness person. Yeah. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about. I'm being really vague.
Sure.
I think she's called Georgia. But she's
Georgia,
okay. Or Lucy Georgia. Oh, see, anyway, she's doing...
Lucy Georgia, yeah. I do know who that is.
Okay, and she's doing like so well. Yeah. She's exploding. And the one, she gave like an insight into like her editing process. And she's full on video editing. I imagine each of her reels is probably about 4 hours of work. Now, not only 4 hours of work, but as you say, having to film portions of her day constantly, because there's so many chops in it in so many different locations. And as you say, I would despise that. Even back in the day when all you needed to do was take photos, I would never take photos at events.
Yeah.
Like, if there was a pro one, amazing, a pro photographer, but I'd never do, I would always just do photo shoots and then put them on Dropbox, and just whenever I needed a photo, just steal one from a random shoot and then get 5,000 likes back in the day.
It's funny, isn't it, how it's changed.
And so let's move on a slightly different direction now, which is your psychology background. So you did psychology and what, something else?
Sociology.
And how have you, do you think you use that in your job now? So that could be like as a yoga teacher, when you're teaching a class or holding space on a retreat, like, are you like kind of evaluating people and kind of working out what could be best for them, et cetera, especially in a retreat environment, which I guess we'll talk about more in a little bit. And then are you using it also like on social media in terms of what you present? Do you think of it through that lens? Well, if I do that, well, that will pull people in this way. If I use this term, then actually that will drag people in or persuade people to be kind of bonded with me. Yeah. Are you manipulating people? Is essentially what I'm asking.
Well, I actually hadn't thought of that before, but no, I'm definitely not doing that on social media. But yeah, it was. I loved psychology. I've always loved it. But there's a. It's almost like another fine blurred line of this yoga teacher and therapist, because especially when you're doing things like private clients, you kind of become a therapist to them sometimes, because you have a lot of conversations with them, you get to know them very well. And when you're doing practices like yoga or adding in meditation, breath work, anything like that, you know, you are in vulnerable spaces with people. And especially on retreats as well, you are opening up that space for people to be vulnerable. And so like things do come up for people. And I think the degree, while I don't believe that having a psychology and sociology degree makes you a therapist in any way at all, you're definitely not qualified to be a therapist with just a degree, but it has helped me learn and understand and how to cope with people and how to care for them when they are in that space. And it's very like, because also I just, as well as doing it as a degree, I do just find psychology very interesting. So I listen to a lot of audiobooks and, you know, do lots of things about it, because I just, and read books because I want to learn about it. And I think it does help you to navigate that space when it is vulnerable for people. But yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one, because it's, you know, you kind of have to figure out where to stop with, especially with private clients and things like that. You don't want to like cross a line where they're just, you know, opening up to you and expect you to be a therapist to them. But at the same time, you know, if you're an empathetic person, you're caring for that person, you want to help them. But yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm not massively approachable. So there is some good stuff about that, I think, actually. Yeah. Like in terms of, it keeps me a little bit safer. Like, I'm not the kind of person, like to look at. You'd be like, oh, he really wants a hug. Let's hug him after class and bond with him. And I don't give off any kind of, like, any vibe that I want to be hugged. And hopefully, I don't think so. I don't give off any kind of, like, creepy vibe, etc. either. It kind of keeps me safe in that sense. And the same with people opening up to me. Although I do, so my background, so law, but then I did lots of, I went to the charity sector and lots of coaching, mentoring of like younger people. And I say younger, kind of like 14 to 22. So not always that young. So I can't help but sometimes like ask questions and ask more questions and really kind of like, and ask questions that make people kind of, and that's why the mentor program I do works quite well, because I actually have a significant background in that, so I can't help that sometimes, but I don't have issues with boundaries. I've always been quite good at just being like, nope, that's not my, that's not in the scope of what you're paying me for. But how do you navigate it, like on retreats particularly? Because you run retreats yourself, and I do. You don't have control of who comes on the retreats. I'm sure that lots of people that come in your retreats, you know, but the bigger you get on social media, the chances are, especially because you don't teach that many public classes, you don't teach any public classes, do you?
Not anymore.
So there is a chance that, like, there's a chance that lots of people are coming that you just have never met before. So how would you, okay, so two layers to this question then. How do you create boundaries there? Especially like if you have fans, as it were, coming. So let's start with that layer. So how would you navigate it in that sense?
I think just being sort of knowing when to say that you don't know enough, and knowing when to tell people to go and search for things in other places, especially on retreats, because I'm really into internal family systems therapy at the moment. I've been researching it a lot. I'm not qualified in it, but I've had the therapy myself, and we can go into more of that later. But I bring a little bit of that into the retreat. So I do get people to, through journaling, meditation and yoga practices and a lot of sharing circles, we do get quite deep sometimes, because we're learning a lot about ourselves and uncovering a lot of things. But I think navigating that boundary is just being able to create that safe environment where people feel open enough to share. But also, if it ever does sort of feel like it's crossing a line, just knowing when to say to them, I think you need to see a therapist about this. I think you need to go and see another person about this. And I'm always here for you to talk to if you need, but trying to sort of navigate it in that way and kind of guide them in a different direction, rather than it just being all on you all the time. If that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
And that kind of leads to, have you ever had any issues with increased notoriety? and then any issues that come from that, like weirdos coming on retreats or any kind of weird behavior on social media. Have you had to deal with anything like that?
Not in person. So on the retreats, luckily, everybody that's been to one of my retreats has been a really lovely person, even if I've never met them before. Nice. I think sometimes when, you know, yoga retreats kind of attract that a certain type of person anyway, who was very open and, you know, and lovely. So that's been lucky. But I've spoken to friends about this before, but you do have to sort of navigate, especially as a female yoga teacher. It's kind of a little bit of a different space. And I've had sort of weird, you know, creepy messages online and stuff like that. But I have had a few emails before where men would sort of say, oh, I really want to do a yoga session with you. Can we book a private session? And I wouldn't go to their house. Like, I don't feel comfortable going to a random guy's house to do a session. But I would say, yeah, sure, we could book like a studio or something. But then, like, the next message, it would just get weird. And you're suddenly like, oh, okay, I thought this was a client, but it's not a client. So we have to, like, you know, get rid of that. And so there is that a lot, which I've spoken to sort of, I haven't actually spoken to any male yoga teachers about this, so I wonder if you feel the same, but I have spoken to male PTs, and a lot of friends of mine are PTs and male, and they're like, oh, I've never even thought of that before. Like, I've never had to think about that kind of dynamic with a client.
But the PT world is very different. Like, I know lots of PTs and there's a lot of naughtiness in that world. And
really?
I know some PTs in certain environments in London where they're essentially PTs / male escorts. In terms of the yoga world, like for male, like, I would always advise anyone to never go to a stranger's house for privates, like male, female, whatever. You know, it can get weird either way. And I think the first question one should ask if you get an email for someone requesting a private is, so where do you know me from? What classes have you been to? As an immediate filter question. It's okay, so where have we met? And that's it's a really short email that I always send. Thanks for getting in touch. So where, just to clarify, where have we met? You've been to my class a lot. And that normally exposes people straight away if they're a bit strange. And if they just say, oh, I just saw you on social media. And I'm like, okay, so where do you practice yoga? Like, I almost borderline interrogate them. And I think it might be a little bit different if you really need the money. And you're like, oh my God, I'm desperate for it. I really need another private client to pay my rent. But I'm luckily in a situation where I can have all of those filter questions. Then if they've just been recommended by someone on social media, then it's definitely rent a studio space.
Yeah.
But I think I would say 90% of my private clients in the last 10 years, I've known. And the other ones have been like celebrities and their agent. So I'm like, they're cool.
Yeah.
Although this is something Holly owes me for. I actually turned down Robbie Williams to go on a second date with Holly.
Did you?
Well, I didn't turn down him. It was his agent or whoever it was. But yeah, we had a second date booked in. I think I was taking her to the theatre, or third date. I was taking her to the theatre and booked it. And
that's so romantic.
But I think, I've had creepy stuff as well. It has mainly been for men though. Like, it's been like, do you nude sessions? So I've had that so many times.
Yeah.
But naked yoga sessions. And, and
that's literally what the email was.
That's been the only one, I think. There's lots of that, or people, the ones that I tend to veer away from, the people that, oh, I'm new to yoga, I'd really like to practice, I've been to a class once. I was like, okay, well, come to my class again.
Yeah.
Come to this class again.
Yeah.
Before we do a private, come to class.
Yeah.
And there's one individual, a few actually, who have had that with, and then they just don't get in contact again. And they do again 6 months later. They're like, oh, I actually have a private. I was like, where have you been to my class? but I think all of us have to protect ourselves. And it's for the sake of like the studio hire fee, which if you teach at a studio, it might be 10 or 15 quid.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's completely worth doing that
to
protect yourself completely. Yeah. Let's move in a different direction now. So you're a gymnast or ex-gymnast. And so I have experience with gymnastics, gymnasts doing yogis. My ex, who would, I guess, be much older than you, was an ex-GB gymnast as well. And came to my first yoga class, or came to her first yoga class, and obviously could do the most incredible stuff, even though she hadn't done gymnastics for years at that point. And there's always a question then, is that yoga or is it gymnastics-inspired yoga just happens to be on a yoga mat? And I wondered how you navigated it. So I know lots of dancers, and again, I'm not slating this at all. You know, they're dancers, they're professional dancers. They connect with their bodies. They want to move their bodies. They start to a yoga class. And then before long, they're kind of doing dance on a yoga mat.
Yeah.
And that's really common, that dancers essentially are just doing dance on a yoga mat, kind of a yoga themed dance routine. And it's beautiful and it's creative. And I guess dance and gymnastics are a big part of your career, is you're doing something for an external observer. Even though, of course, you enjoy it yourself and you get a lot from yourself, there is all that thought of judges or external observer, etc. It's a performative element to it. And so the first question I have for you, like, did you find actually by being in that space, you just wanted more of the same thing but on a yoga mat? Or did you find actually you wanted yoga to be something very different for you, a completely different thing?
Yeah.
Like I, and most of the gymnasts I know, initially at least, it became really gymnastics on a yoga mat.
Yeah. I think that is exactly what I felt as well. When I first came into it, I'd stopped doing gymnastics because I went to university. And the main reason I went to yoga was because I wanted to keep my flexibility from the gymnastics. So I came into it from a purely physical point of view. And it was still more of an internal thing. Like I just wanted to stay mobile. But and I remember going to the classes, and obviously I could do a lot of the poses already because of my gymnastics background. But the thing that made it really different for me was I really struggled with the slowness of the practice. That was like what, because I could do all the poses, but I was getting really frustrated in the pose. I was like, why are we holding this for so long? And I was just like getting really annoyed in it. And that brought up a lot of stuff. And then the more I went back and the more I did it, I realized that I actually need the slowness, and I now enjoy the slowness. So then it kind of shifted the practice for me into less of a physical practice. And I still do. I mean, obviously you get the physical benefits from doing a yoga practice, but for me anyway, I do see yoga practice as more of a mindful practice.
Mm.
And I literally go for my own sanity now, for my own mind. And it's just a very different practice now. And I when I first joined, I definitely did all the power yoga flows and like the crazy handstand, the rocket yoga, all that kind of stuff, because I was just like, yeah, I just want to do handstands and I want to do all this kind of stuff. And now I do a very, like, I love slow flows and yin classes and more kind of flowy classes, but I've kind of separated it in my own head. Like I still do love to do handstands and gymnastics, but if I want to do that, even if I'm doing it on a yoga mat, I just see that as gymnastics.
Yeah.
But if I'm doing yoga on a yoga mat, it feels very different. Like it's more intentional. Maybe it's the intention that you put behind it when you go into it.
Did you find, I've never asked kind of a gymnastics before a dancer, there's a difference between, I guess, the shape that we would call a pose and doing the actual asana itself.
So let's say
you're doing warrior two at the very beginning. And I'm sure like to make the shape at a very visibly deep level was kind of the easiest thing in the world for you.
Yeah.
And I guess, and I could be wrong, like in gymnastics, you know, the aim isn't unnecessary effort, it's efficiency. So once you're doing the thing you're meant to look like you're doing, you're looking for ease there. And I know some people say effort and ease, but my view is in a yoga pose, you're kind of looking for subjective challenge. To challenge your steady breath, to challenge your steady mind, particularly in something like vinyasa yoga, you're looking for that subjective challenge. And have you found that more? Like in Warrior 2, once you've spent a few years making the shape, you can start to explore the nuances of like what subtle muscle groups are doing, what's engaging, what's stretching, what's lengthening, what happens if I actually fight back and explore active range of motion, or what do if I contract the muscle? Like, have you explored that more? And do you think at the beginning there was lots of shape making and shape replication for you that was easy?
Yeah, definitely. Like it was actually the cues of the teacher. I can't actually remember. I mean, it was multiple teachers when I was first doing it, but the cues of the teacher made me realize that a pose could feel very different but still look the same. Because I could do a warrior too, and I could put my arms here, but then obviously when they're cueing certain things, like engaging things and tucking a pelvis under, and because I had the body awareness from the gymnastics, I knew what to do when they were telling me what to do. And doing it was just like, oh, this feels very different now, even though I'm in exactly the same pose as I was before. And that kind of shifted my perspective on the poses a little bit to make them a bit different. And yeah, it was interesting what you said earlier about doing it for an external source. And I never actually thought, Because I knew that at the beginning of my yoga practice, I definitely did. I was doing all the shapes because I thought they looked pretty and, they felt good. And it was like, oh my God, look how flat I am in the splits and everything. And maybe that did come from, I'd never linked the two together, but maybe it did come from the gymnastics and being judged on exactly how you look in a pose in gymnastics. And so I had was always doing it for an audience. And then you bring that into the yoga class. And it does, especially with social media as well. At the beginning, I was definitely guilty of doing all these crazy poses and posting a little quote underneath, like everybody did at that time. But yeah, it's shifted so much now, my practice from back then. And now I'm, it doesn't matter what it looks like. Especially when you're like filming online, I feel like the stuff I film for social media, I'm filming it for social media. That's not actually my yoga practice. My yoga practice, I would never actually film. But yeah, it's an interesting sort of perspective to see it like that.
Yeah, likewise. I've never filmed a yoga or meditation practice in my life. I've
No.
filmed me simulating it, but never
Yeah.
actually. But never actually doing the thing. Oh, there was one thing I wanted
Yeah.
to pick up on there that you said. Oh yeah, it was more that you said, sometimes social media might make you kind of performative, but I think at the same time there are kind of yoga subcultures or styles where there
Yeah.
is that kind of let's impress each other, and it almost feels like we're in an American high school. And there's these subcultures, and each one is like trying to like outdo the other one. And
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's bad, but it's not what we want. But at the same time, many people start yoga for the first time thanks to those styles, like the more extreme, flamboyant styles, where perhaps there is a bit of a competitive spirit, as it were, is perhaps what draws people into yoga. Some people in the first place, and I'm picking on more some more modern styles there. But I've seen lots of competitors in like the Ashtanga world as well, and the old school styles of yoga. There's lots of that there as well, and certainly lots of performative stuff there in certain sectors. Ice baths and saunas. So you're now working, you're still doing stuff with sauna and plunge. Yeah, that's still a thing. So I just wondered, like, how does your, what's the title, head of wellness there? So did you have, so you've been self-employed, and I don't know what you, obviously, I'm not asking what you're like, contractual status is there, but having a more kind of like permanent fixture job like that, was there any kind of reservation behind it? And were you previously into saunas and I can't believe how much everyone is doing this now, or how many
Oh, I know,
places are
it's
opening up.
crazy.
Like, I thought I've been into cold plunge for quite a while. I've gotten in my garden and it's powered, etc. Saunas I've loved forever, and I kept thinking for the last 6 years, oh, I'd love to open one. And ultimately, I'm not that guy. I don't know how to get investment. It's not my, I've got lots of skills, but that's not one of them. So I never thought anything of it. But it was always in the back of my mind, like, how cool would it be? And even last year, I think, or a year and a half ago, when I got delivered like a pop-up sauna from a company called Bast, shout out Bast, who are a Swedish company. They sent it to a place, like, where was it? It was in like some obscure east north area of London I'd never been to. And it was like a community of like saunas and ice baths at the back of this old building. Like, it was quite down and dirty, but an amazing community. But that was the only place like it. And now, even in the last 4 or 5 months, there is just so many sauna plunge companies opening,
So many, yeah.
which is cool. And I don't know how many will survive. I don't know how much of a fad it is, because a lot of gyms are now getting saunas anyway and plungers anyway. But let's talk about like the first question. So how you got into, okay, two layers. Why are you doing it? Like, were there any reservations? And then were you into it already before you got involved?
I've done sauna. I never did it regularly before I started working there, but I'd done a few of them in various different places. The first one I ever did was actually on my brother's day retreat that he did, and it was like a big ice bath, like one of those massive round ones, and you all get in all together. And it was at the end. There's loads of things happening in the day. There was like movement, breath work, all this kind of stuff, and the ice bath was at the end. And the entire day I was just had anxiety about getting into the ice bath. It's all I could think about was like, oh my God, because I'm a naturally cold person. Like I'm always cold, and being cold is just like worst thing ever. I didn't want to do it. But overcoming that and getting in and doing it in a group setting, and then obviously you feel a buzz afterwards and you're like, oh my God, this feels amazing. It's great. That got me into it a little bit more. And I still don't enjoy ice baths. I do them because I feel like they're good for me and I'd feel good afterwards, but I don't enjoy being in them. But yeah, I came into that job. When did it start? Last last April. And I'm very lucky with working there because it is very flexible. Like I don't have set hours and I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to be in the studio at all. So it's kind of still, and I wanted to make sure that it was like that because I'm not, I still like, I didn't want to be in the corporate world because I felt restricted having certain days and times and things like that. So I wanted to make sure that this was right for me, and this opportunity came up and it just all fit perfectly. And then the space is just beautiful as well. So, and I've met a lot of interesting people. You come in, and I think the whole reason he wanted to create the sauna the way he did was though that it was a bit more of like a community driven thing. And you do, you just end up kind of having chats with people in the sauna, and you know, it's quite a fun thing to do. But yeah, I've completely forgot where I was going with that.
Well, I think you've answered both questions.
Okay.
Let's do some little quick fires now. So what is your go-to journaling style as a quick fire question? What does that look like?
That's interesting. I was never, I never used to be a very big journaler. I used to get a little bit, I don't know, I just used to, I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and you know, when your handwriting's not nice and it's always messy, and I just kind of would give up after the first few sessions. But recently, I've actually, since January, I've been doing this book called The Artist's Way. I don't know if you've heard of it before. It's actually a book for artists who are having creative block,
Ooh.
but anybody can use it, and it's really, really interesting. And you basically have things to do every week. It's a 12-week course, and you read one chapter a week. And in that week, you have tasks to do, and every single day you have to do your morning pages. And so all that is just writing 3 pages of conscious thought. So just whatever comes out, you just write, but you have to do 3 pages, and you have to do that every day. And then once a week, you also take yourself on an artist date. So you don't have to go to a gallery, you can just go anywhere you want to go. And so doing that, I've been doing it every day since the 1st of January. Doing that has made me realize that actually that's the style of journaling that I really like. And I have actually been doing it, I've been doing it on my laptop. I know it's controversial because you should, you know, do it on a piece of paper. But I think the thing that was blocking me from journaling before was the fact that my hand would ache and I'd get like, you know, it would get all messy, and then that would frustrate me more. So I was like, maybe if I just get rid of that and I just type it, then that would help. And it has actually really, really helped me. And so now I type 3 pages every morning.
Okay, that's a lead. Okay, that's a question then. Because when you said you write 3 pages, I thought, okay, well, writing 3 pages, you know, you depending on your size. So what font size are you using? And is it three A4 pages? Are
It's
you
3 A4 pages. It takes me about half an hour, 40 minutes every morning.
okay? You must have a big font then. You must be going on like 16,
I don't
17.
know. I think it's like maybe 12 or 13. It's fairly small. I type quite fast.
If it's 12 or 13, that's about 2,000 words, I
Yeah, maybe.
feel.
I should have a look. I should see how many words
I'm
I actually have
into
no
that.
idea.
What misconceptions do you think people have of you?
Of me, that I'm calm all the time because I'm a yoga teacher.
What does success look for you like at this stage?
I think success is just being happy and being proud of where you are in that moment at that time. Yeah, I think that. And being authentic, being able to be authentically you and being proud of it.
Any new habits that you're planning to add or have added to your life recently?
Definitely the journaling has been one, and the whole artist date thing is definitely something I want to continue. I realize that I don't often leave the house just to do something that I want to do. I'm always going out for work or to meet someone or to meet a friend. I don't just go out just to, you know, go and find something that I love. And so that's something that's been really fun. I definitely want to keep doing
Do you
that.
have to do that alone?
Yeah, you have to do it alone, and it can be anything, but you just have to go on your own and experience it on your own.
Which I think is like, and like the, for me, and I guess it depends on kind of what stage people are at in relationships and life. Like alone time doesn't exist particularly. Work time exists, and even like getting to the gym. You know, even though I've literally got a gym in my back garden, even getting to that and having to learn from there is just so hard to fit in. So I think so valuable. Now, God, someone I really respect who I forgot wrote something recently. Well, not wrote something recently. I read something recently that they wrote about this massive power of like going to a gallery and just sitting in front of a single painting for an hour. And I think it was someone who runs some kind of like creativity course made their students do that once a week, an hour sitting in front of a single painting. Moving on, anything you've purchased, ideally below £100, in the last however long that you found particularly good for your life? It could be anything. Books, coffee machines, anything. Or maybe not. Maybe not coffee machines.
I feel like I haven't actually bought much recently apart from, I mean, I've been traveling a lot. So apart from plane tickets, all my money's gone on that. So I haven't actually bought anything.
That's a good. That's a good place to be in life.
Yeah.
It's not
I guess
a lot
it.
You need. And no. Then, if we were in a cold plunge, not we were in a cold plunge, but like if you're next to someone, I know in sauna and plunge they've got plunges next to each other, and you're lasting for 60 seconds or less.
Yes.
How would you describe your philosophy of life as we're in adjacent plunges? So it's quick fire.
I would describe my philosophy of life as being as you are a creation, and so I feel like we are supposed to create and we're supposed to be authentic and live a life that feels connected and in line with our own morals. And I think it's hard to do, but I also really think that you need community to do it. So you can do all this stuff on your own, but you need to have the bigger picture to feel, even going back to the other questions, to feel successful and to feel complete. I feel like we need other people around us.
I just wonder if, side note, like elevator pitches are going to evolve into like sauna pitches. So the idea of like doing a quick fire pitch, is it going to be now more professionals are meeting in saunas and cold plunges? Is it going to be how quickly can you do it?
Yeah, I mean, get stuff done very quickly, to
and
be fair.
And under pressure.
Right, let's do this.
There's one book I'd recommend for you, actually. Right, do you know Neil Gaiman, the writer? Obviously, he is a morally awful person. All the stuff that's come out about him is horrific. But, you can separate the sinner from some of their work to some degree. But he wrote a wonderful book on creativity and art.
Okay.
With someone else who did the illustration, really short book, and I don't know the name. Like I've got it downstairs, but I forget the name. But if you just type in Neil Gaiman on Amazon, beyond his fiction work, you'll see this. And like if you type in Neil Gaiman art book, it will come up. Absolutely stunning book on creativity, which is worth a purchase. Now tell people where they can find you and anything you've got going on that people can engage with.
Yep. So my Instagram is Sesto Yoga, which is just my surname and then yoga. And my website is exactly the same. And upcoming, I've just booked a retreat in Portugal. So that'll be happening on the 17th to the 21st of July. And because I've been very into this whole creative stuff, especially with doing this book and this course, I'm actually bringing a little bit of that into the retreat. So we are going to be doing yoga, meditation, journaling every day. And there will be space to relax and chill as well. But the owners of this retreat venue are ceramicists themselves. So they're going to be doing like a little pottery workshop for everyone. And in a lot of the journaling sessions and a lot of the personal development sessions that we do, as well as learning about ourselves, we're also going to be trying to rediscover our own creative spark and what we love to do. Maybe, you know, what we like doing as a kid that we've forgotten, all of that kind of stuff, in a beautiful setting in Portugal. It's about an hour from Lisbon in the countryside.
Okay,
so that'll be really nice. And then there will be another retreat later on in the year, but that one is still in processes of becoming. Also, I have launched an online course called Self, which is a little bit more about kind of diving into self-discovery and learning about yourself. It's a 4-week course. And in that, it's kind of like a taster of what we do on the retreats, but an online version. So we have online yoga classes and meditations and journaling prompts. And there's a little bit to read and a task to do each week as well. I think that might be everything.
Amazing. I love the words. I mean, I think I must have read it before, but I've never heard anyone say the word ceramicists.
Ceramicists.
I love that word. What a wonderful word. Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been lovely. Honestly, unbalanced.